Storytelling for me is about communication, of course. So it's not just about Oatly, but it is, as a leader, you need to, you know, have this fire speech. You need to be able to stand in front of one employee or 10 or 500 and show the direction.
Welcome to the Leading Transformational Change podcast. Our passion is to help you lead and develop organizations with a remarkably healthy culture that can positively impact all of its stakeholders. Every other Thursday, we drop hour-long conversations with world-leading researchers and experts on culture, ethics, change, and leadership. My name is Tobias Sturesson, and I'm your host and the co-founder of Art Management. How do you scale up culture and stay aligned with your values when you experience fast growth? While many countries face economic slowdowns, layoffs, and uncertain economic markets, many organizations have in the past or will in the future experience a period of rapid growth. And some are, of course, in the midst of it right now. A company that has really experienced hypergrowth over the last few years is the Swedish oat milk company Oatly. I believe most of you are familiar with their bold packaging or irreverent marketing, like a 2021 Super Bowl commercial featuring their former CEO singing "Wow, no cow" while standing in an open field. Oatly has also become well known for being vocal about their mission to shift consumption of animals to plants in order to help secure the longevity of the planet. Being vocal about their values and mission has also come with criticism, for example, because of the kind of investors that have helped drive their fast growth. In this episode of the Leading Transformational Change podcast, I get to sit down with my friend Cecilia Bergman Eriksson, an interim manager who, until October last year, worked for 2 years at Oatly, first as a partner and advisor, and then as their interim vice president of people and culture. Her earlier career has also included, among other things, a 2-year stint as HR director and then chief operating officer at fast-growing Massive Entertainment, a world-leading video game studio owned by Ubisoft. In this episode, I talk to Cecilia about the challenges and learnings of building culture in a hyper-growth environment, why brave leadership is critical, and why organizations have to stop promoting people to be managers who don't want to do the work of leadership. However, before we jump into the conversation, I want to tell you about an exciting new resource we've created. One of the greatest challenges ethics and compliance and HR managers tell us they face is getting their executive team to take responsibility for culture actively. Executives often feel that culture seems fussy and complex, and they don't really understand the impact on the business. So we're here to help, and we've created an 8.5-minute video for you to share with your executive team to help you have robust conversations about the effects and really the case for culture. It's available for free, together with our free guide to culture change and other valuable resources on heartmanagement.org/resources. heartmanagement.org/resources. Before I go, I want to say that we have so many exciting conversations coming up. To just name two, Klaus Moosmeyer, the Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer at Novartis, one of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies, will join us, and Rebecca Newton, an organizational psychologist and a visiting lecturer at Harvard Law and London Business School, who brings some great insights on culture. But now, without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Cecilia Bergman Eriksson. Cecilia, it's really a privilege to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Tobias.
I'm very much looking forward to this conversation, and I think that our audience will be really inspired and have a lot to learn from your experience. And of course, we'll focus quite much on what it looks like to think about culture and values in a hyper-growth environment. And of course, one of those companies that you've been involved with is a company that I think a lot of our listeners are acquainted with, which is Oatly. And could you first just describe perhaps something about the culture, about Oatly, kind of what is it that is special about the company, coming into that company from having worked at so many other workplaces before?
It is an amazing company, Oatly. And I really say Oatly is a company built on the idea of change and innovation. That is the truth. So the thing is to be able to do change and have that innovation skills, you need to be open. You need to be curious. You need to be creative and risk-taking. So risk-taking, that is essential, I will say. As Oatly, it has really great guiding principles, you know. And this is what is expected, not just wanted. It is expected of me and also what I expect from others. It is quite responsibility to say, be fearless, Tobias. I would say, get in the game. Embrace the unknown. Welcome failure and use your judgment. So that is quite a difference what I have been used to in previous assignment.
Could you say something more about that difference? Like, what is it in that you think is different?
When I can say, we say, get in the game, that means that I, as a leader, I must be a storyteller. I must say, this is the direction towards we are heading. And then I say, use your judgment to me, us. Trust the process, trust your competence, and boom, you are in the productivity. That is one. And then I have, embrace the unknown. That is okay. That means that I have perhaps no clue what it exactly means, but still, I need to take my experience and just do what I think is the best. So that is the responsibility for everyone to listen, be self-aware. So it's something like this.
Super. Really, really helpful. And we're going to dig in a lot into that. But one of the first things that I wanted to ask you there is like, so how do you recruit people who kind of have those type of, or who abide by those type of principles?
To recruit people in this hyper growth is not that, it's quite difficult because you need to think, I would say, you need to think about capacity instead of not just one role, because the speed is going so fast. So what I need in March could be different when we come to October. So one, recruit for capacity and have questions so you can hear and listen and feel, how is this person when it comes to be fearless? Do he, she, han needs a lot of information before you can take a decision, or are you risk-taking? So you need to have really skilled, structured question. But I will say it is about capacity.
Really, really helpful. So as you came to Oatly and took on the role as VP of People and Culture, and you had another role first, but what were some of the initial challenges that you faced and perhaps insights that you had?
It is what you are saying, not just Oatly. It is other assignment as well, because As a VP People and Culture, my role is to have an organization that are fit for purpose. Being able to scale up, scale down, build high-performing teams, be efficient, and so every employees do their best work ever. The challenges is the speed. It is unpredictable. It's a complex world. It's hard finding the right capacity and getting them into productivity directly. And then we have the time zones. Conducting meeting, communication between employees, different location, it is quite difficult. And the same to building high-performing teams. How do you build high-performing teams in a good way when you have new colleagues, new employees, bi-weekly? And then we could add cultural differences. Different view how to work, how to collaborate, what is a good leadership, etc., etc. So that is the challenges. But I will say it is amazing. It is amazing.
Super, super interesting. So what were some of the perhaps best practices or the things that you've learned that are key to really fostering a positive organizational culture during periods of significant growth?
You know, I have been thinking about this quite from now and then. I would say sometimes the simple is the best. I would say, I actually have three things to say. I would say one, spend time with your employees. Spend time with your employees. Get to know them. So start by checking in once, twice per week. Give them a couple of minutes each and miracle will happen. And then I say, structure time for reflection. You know, you get radical learning through reflection. So get tools for this. Have quarterly reflection time within your team and cross-functionals. You know, talk about what we're doing and how we are doing. And then I will say sense of purpose. Communicators. The leaders must be communicators in meeting, training, onboard, performance review. Always, always talk about sense of purpose. Those are my three best practices.
Really, really helpful. And something that I'm thinking about when it comes to Oatly is the aspect of values. And of course, you talked about the idea of guiding principles and also that Oatly really has this very clear message that basically saying we're different. And of course, it's incredibly bold in its marketing, in its messaging. And it's also like very bold with saying that we are standing up for something. We want to see change. And of course, a lot of focus on really improving climate and so on. And it's interesting to me, and I also found it really interesting that the new CEO at Oatly who stepped in this year, or maybe it was last year, really has a background at Mars, which is another company that we featured in this podcast, which has, in that sense, a very, very different approach in that it's much more laid back in the way it communicates its commitment, even though it is really committed. So I just find them very, very interesting approaches. And also, so when you are building this kind of company, how do you ensure that you actually align with those values as you're growing quickly? And of course, there have been different things as it is with any company. For example, when Oatly took in Chinese owners and so on, like how is that aligned? And of course, there are a lot of, but what are some things that you have seen are critical to ensure that you actually live by the values you claim, especially when you're growing so quickly as a company?
Yeah, how do I ensure that? Perhaps the most important is, I think, lead by example. I say that to me and to the leaders, lead by example. You know, the company leaders need to consistently demonstrate and embody the core values in their action and decisions. This sets the tone. So lead by example. I often talk about communication because that is so crucial. Clear communication. I was talking about this for a couple of minutes ago, but communication of the core values, talk about them through meetings, training, internal communication channels. All this helps reinforce the importance and ensure that we have them top of mind. So beside being the example, the communication, I will say embedded in processes. Have it when the key processes, pre-boarding, when you are hiring, when you have onboarding, talk about the values in the performance review, when you have leadership trainings. All these three things helps to integrate the core values. It isn't easy, but nudging every day. Some of them, absolutely.
When it comes to decision making, because I think all these things that you've been saying are really, really important. And you talked about processes, you talked about what we would call like rituals for having these conversations. And when it comes to decision making, when it comes to where we're facing different priorities and something, what is something that you have maybe seen at Oatly or at other companies that you worked with where you see that, okay, this is a great way to actually reflect and ensure that that our values are really integrated into the decision-making process.
Decision-making, because we say as a core, take decision, take the risks, but empower employees. Because in this kind of speed, of course, me as a leader, I can take decision. But I do need to believe that I don't have the questions. So encourage autonomy and decision-making at all level of the organization, I would say. So take ownership of their work, make it meaningful, contribution. I think that can strengthen the culture and maintain the uniqueness. We had an expression that... decentralize complexity, empower your employees. Decision making should be where the difficulties is, more or less.
Super interesting. And we had some time ago, we had Frank Blake on the podcast and he talked about that senior leaders, senior executives should absorb complexity, which I think is like really saying that we want to kind of help our employees from facing too many of the dilemmas of what that we put pressure on delivering on something that then is in conflict with what we say that we should value. But really what you're saying is that like in an environment like Oatly, that what you really put a big emphasis on is really trust, the trust in people across the company to use their judgment to make good decisions. And then what do you do when that goes wrong?
Of course it goes wrong, but it goes wrong for everyone, as the leaders, employees, the consultants, we are humans. So I think when we speak about the leadership, and you and I, sometimes we speak about brave leaders. and I will say a leader with self-awareness also say to the employees, I have your back. I am here. So that is so important. So then I say, get in the game again. We help each other. So for me as a leader plus 25 years, this is what happened. This is a regular difficulties you're doing wrong. But when I need, I have support. When I need, I have Cecilia. She will back me up. and we will fix this.
It's really avoiding a blame culture. It's really avoiding a culture where people try to look for scapegoats, but instead really putting that focus on taking ownership of your decisions and also then of your mistakes, but then also creating an environment where you won't immediately feel like you'll get punished for your mistakes, but instead that you're, so someone is believing in you and giving you a second chance. So when you think about a company growing really rapidly, and we think about a company like Oatly, and we can think about, of course, I think for our listeners, whatever workplace they're at, that has had something that has been kind of core and fundamental to the culture at the very beginning. And then the company grows. And of course, it's very easy to lose sight of some of those things that have been. And so some things have to change because as an organization grows, you cannot hold on to every way. And I think a typical example is in a smaller organization, everyone might know everything about what's going on within the organization and they know all the employees and so on. And suddenly you grow and you can't know everything anymore. You have to work in a different way and you won't know everyone anymore. And you won't know what's going on in every department within the organization. And I've also seen many times how employees experience that as a loss. They experience that as a death of something that was precious to them. But when you think about really holding on to what are kind of the core components of our culture and really connected to our values that we don't want to lose sight of, while at the same time letting go of things that won't work as we're growing. What are some things that you would recommend leaders to think of there?
Leadership is not a role, it is a skill. And if you notice, if you are aware of that these things can happen, the leaders who are aware of this, who are curious, who are a storyteller, who stay close to their employees, who create a space for openness, for vulnerability, where we speak out and address, how do we avoid, you know, a silence culture? I think that is the way. Address the problem we can see. Be in head of issues. So recruit the right leaders.
What do you think then is really key to recruiting the right leaders?
A leader must have self-awareness and self-confidence also, of course, in a good way. A leader for me is someone who has a grown mindset, knows that I know a lot, but I don't know everything. Because when a leader thinks he, she, and knows everything, you won't learn nothing. Be curious. Be open. Show trust. Spend time with your employees. Be a storyteller. You need to like your employees. You need to get to know them. What are your strengths? What are you threatening about? Do I know that? We have speed, we have efficiency, and we will have a productivity that is amazing.
You talk a lot about storytelling, and of course, I think many of those of us who know Oatly, and I'm thinking about, for example, walking the streets in New York and seeing ads in many different places around the world. And of course, Oatly is really, really known as incredible storytellers. And if you have an Oatly package, you'll read the text because it's actually really interesting. And then you're always telling a story of why the company exists, but also, of course, really giving this message of this irreverent type of attitude, you could say, to marketing and so on. But internally at Oatly, what were some things that you saw there about the power of storytelling, and also maybe just some very practical things of how it was done internally at the company. Just thinking that it is such an incredible, and you told me earlier that Oatly has actually won several prizes as a top marketing agency, even though it's not a marketing agency because it's just the internal function. So what are some things internally that you saw in terms of storytelling?
Storytelling for me is about communication, of course. So it's not just about Oatly, but it is, as a leader, you need to, you know, have this fire speech. You need to be able to stand in front of one employee or 10 or 500 and show the direction. That is what we did. Talk about the direction, talk about it quite frequently because it changed. So storytelling for me is telling the sense of purpose. I will just say, many people talk about sense of urgency, even in this hyper-growth company. But I don't know actually if that is something that drives people. I would say sense of purpose, that drives people. So show it in the meetings and in the quarterly check-ins and when you have your performance. Be the one who can say, we're going this direction today. Are you in? Can you do this? Do you love it? And then we have a sweet spot.
I think also interesting when we talk about leadership, because I think that you said that leadership is a skill. And I'm also thinking that leadership is a choice. That it is, we can have the skill, but we also have to make the choice and the choice of leadership each and every day. And that choice is, of course, many times might be fun and exhilarating, but it might also be really challenging and hard when we have to do things that are, for example, say, okay, we're not going to accept this type of behavior, or do things that are just maybe outside of what we feel very naturally inclined towards. And I, for example, talk to a lot of leaders who don't necessarily feel very naturally inclined to giving a lot of positive feedback. It's not, they don't feel they need it themselves, they don't, but still it is incredibly important. So it's really that choice of doing that. What's your perspective on that?
I agree totally. Being a leader is a choice also. And of course, it is so many difficult situations where you feel alone or where you feel, how do I express this and what is happening? And for this, I will say two things. Team up with a people partner. Have a people partner who you can talk about dilemma. They are excellent in behavioral scientists. So that is one. And I will say, think you are human. The employee in front of you is an adult. It is hard, but have that in mind, that you speak adult to adult, and prepare yourself. So pair up with a people partner. If you had a mentor, it is perfect also. Talk to someone. Take help.
We talked a little bit before about this aspect of ensuring to do avoiding a culture of silence. And I'm thinking that in a company that I mean achieves the kind of success that Oatly has, and that it's a danger of creating a culture both where you will kind of accept that people start taking shortcuts. And I think that's how we see that a lot of kind of misconduct we've seen at Uber, for example, where there was this like breaking the rules, which is great in some way because they needed to innovate, break the rules. But in another way, they also started breaking rules that were not supposed to be broken and started accepting things that became really toxic. And then also, I think it can also create an atmosphere where it's really hard to question and where we're like, so because we should be on and we should be positive and we should be believing in the purpose, that we don't really want to be the people to then also question. And I really, really struggle with this because I think for so many organizations, there's this need. We want people to be into the mission. We want them to be really driven. We want them. And of course, we need that to grow. We need that to get great than big things done and break barriers. And of course, some people who are listening to this, you're working at perhaps a large multinational company or a governmental agency that maybe operates in a bit of a different way because you're not in that same stage. But I think there's still a lot of similarities here. But how do you have that commitment to the mission, commitment to the purpose, and then at the same time, creating really that psychological safety where it's safe to also question, to also say, I don't think this is right. I don't think this works. I think this is something we need to address, and avoiding allowing people to start taking shortcuts or pressuring people to take shortcuts.
Yeah.
Big question.
A big question. And of course, I have seen, you know, silence and people who are afraid of speaking out in every company. That happens. But the thing is to avoid it. And I will say, I go back to building trust. We know there are some quite easy principles to understand how to build team. But it isn't easy, we know it, but still it is hard. To avoid it as much as possible, I will say, have a culture that is built on trust. Because if you have trust, you will have openness. And openness and commitment is hand in hand. That means if I have been able to make my voice heard, and then you say to me, I have heard, but your decision is not the thing we are going forward with, then I can buy in because I have been listening to. Hopefully I take accountability for the thing we say is the right way going forward, even if it isn't mine. There is no shortcuts to take. It is, you know, the weakest link is the people.
Thank you, Cecilia. And I wanted to end the interview with really asking you about, so I mean, you and I, and I've known you for several years. I'm thinking about 10 years actually. And we don't meet that often, but when we do, I think we've had really fascinating conversations on leadership, and I've been really, really inspired and learned a lot from you. And I think something you talk about, and we've talked about it a bit already, but that is that aspect of kind of brave leadership and leaders who are not going to work to position themselves or kind of play too much of political games, but who are more at peace with who they are, knowing their worth and so on, and being able to contribute to really a healthy environment. What are some things that you would really recommend speaking to leaders or speaking to ethics and compliance or HR professionals who are listening? What are some of the things that you think are key around that kind of leadership and to find that kind of leaders and to develop those kind of leaders within an organization?
To me, a great, brave leader is the one who do the right thing, even if no one else does. A brave leader lead through trust. So do you see self-awareness? Do you see curiosity? Do you see that the leader take responsibility for the actions, even the tough actions? Are she willing to make decisions even if it makes taking risks? So trust yourself and ask the question, do you love people? Are you interested in behavioral scientists? Do you want to come close to your employees? Is it okay to be in the back? Do you need to make your voice heard? Hopefully it's no. So have that in mind, that a brave leader is the one who do the right things, even if no one else does.
Of course, this really, I think, comes down to the perspective of motive. And really, what is it that drives me in my desire to choose a leadership position? If we talk about positional leadership, having a managing position. So, and you and I also talked about the danger of, in organizations, really building a system where the only way to kind of get ahead, to take the next leap, is to take on a manager position, even though you might not be, you might just be motivated because it might be a bigger salary or whatever, but and because you don't really have another way to move forward in your career, but that we need the people who actually want to choose leadership, not just choose the position, but choose the act of leading, the act of being a leader. So what's your perspective on that?
I have seen this many times, that an excellent expert, as you're saying, want to take a next step. And the next step is being a leader. But I will say, as every company, please have more than one step up. Make it liksom broad. Have a skill step for experts. Otherwise, you will see it when you talk to the employees, when you make surveys. How do they feel? Are they being seen or heard? Most of the times when you have the leader who have that as a position or power, sometimes there is improvement to do.
I think that connects back to the point of trust and also the trust in the leader. And I think, though, if we would say the positive aspect of the expert taking on the managing role is that they will be seen as competent by their team. They're going to be seen as someone who knows the stuff, which I think for many they really want and enjoy. But then on the other hand, the issue is, and if we go back to the aspect of trust, and trust is, yes, it is competence, but it has a lot to do with really what is, and I talked to Professor Sandra Sucher about this on the podcast in an earlier episode, and it's really, what are the motives behind what I do? Am I treating people fairly? Am I really motivated? Do I truly care to help my team members succeed? And of course, if that is not there, it doesn't help that you're an expert on the actual thing, but you might actually be detrimental to the organization. And I've seen that so many times in organizations that are really struggling because they have a lot of managers who shouldn't be managers. And even as we work with those organizations, we come to the place where we say, there might be people in the room that you realize this is not what you really wanted to do. And then, of course, courage is making that decision and saying, okay, this is not my thing. I'm going to continue being an expert because that's what I want to do. But as you said before, it's really important that organizations make way for that so that we get people to actually do. They might not have all the skills, but they need to have the desire. They need to really want to grow in it. They need to want to take on really the work of leadership. And so, Cecilia, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your experience and your learnings in real time with me here. I know I had to kind of push you a little bit to get you to accept, but I'm very glad that I did. And I truly believe that our listeners have gotten a lot of insights out of this conversation. So thank you.
Thanks you to be us. It was really a great conversation.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, it really means the world to us if you would share, rate, and review it on iTunes. We're super grateful for all the 5-star reviews and generous comments that we received so far. It really helps us take the message of purpose and integrity to a wider audience. And finally, don't forget to grab your free PDF on leadingtransformationalchange.com. See you in 2 weeks.